My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. It's always good to be at this meeting. I can't say this about every meeting, but I do have a respect for this meeting for its solution focus, so I appreciate that. So I just wanted to mention it up front. I was asked by the group to speak for 3 weeks. The first week, which is tonight, will be Trust God. Next week will be Clean House, and the week after that will be Help Others. So obviously week two and three will be a lot easier for me than week one. Trust God, that's a hefty topic that I will try to cover as well as I can. The thing that I find interesting about those three sayings, or whatever you want to call it, is that all three are interrelated, as I see it. That as I help others, it's a little bit easier to trust God. As I clean house, that contributes to my ability to trust God. As I trust God, it makes it easier for me to help others, and so on. You know what I mean? I guess the saying was originally attributed to Dr. Bob. I think it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting saying. You could say that it encompasses the 12 steps. Obviously, there's a little bit more than just those three pithy statements, but it's an attempt at a synopsis of the steps. And what I'd like to do tonight is talk about how I came to trust God, and then I'll talk about trusting God in general for a little while. So I was looking for something out of the big book, but I couldn't find it. I was going to start with that, but I couldn't find it. Trust God. It certainly was not anywhere close to that for most of my life. I find it interesting that as I more and more was able to trust myself, as I more and more was able to be more honest, and more was able to be unselfish, and more was able to contribute in a positive way to life and to others, coincidentally, my trusting God factor improved. So I sort of see it as interrelated. I would also say that another way of saying trust God is to trust life, because I think life is where God sort of interacts with us. But let me start at the beginning. I came from a religious family, so the God thing was definitely on the table pretty upfront my whole life. My whole pre-adult life, let's call it, because age-wise, I became an adult. I wasn't really living at home with my family anymore. So, and then some would say that I still haven't grown up, but I am 51 now, so I guess at some point adulthood happens against my every wish, actually. Now, since I came from a religious family, religion seemed to work for my family. I shouldn't say that religion seemed to work for my family. Religion definitely worked for my family, but it didn't really work for me. Because I can't say that these things were said to me, but what I got from religion is the judgmental God, the punishing God. The God is something to be feared kind of concepts. And I today believe all of those to be completely untrue and couldn't be further from the truth. I don't believe that I'm punished for my sins. I believe that I'm punished by my sins. There's a big difference as far as I'm concerned. It seems to me that when God created all of us, if God knows everything, then God created us in a way and knew ahead of time what was going to happen. And why would God judge me for something that he probably knew that was going to happen? And what I see as life, and what I see as how I interact with life, or how I interact with God, or whatever you want to call that, what I've come to see is that I've never been met with anything more than love. And that sometimes things didn't happen the way I wanted them to, but in recent years, like let's say the last 15 years, which is when my spirituality really took off, what I've seen again and again and again and again and again, to the point where I don't even have to wait to get out the other side. What I've seen again and again and again and again and again is that when I go through forced, painful change, I always come out the other side the better for it. As long as I use the experience in a spiritual way, or rather, as long as I use the experience to learn and grow spiritually. And I know that's heavy and maybe it's controversial. I don't really care. I'm talking about my experience right now. But it wasn't like that in the beginning. You could easily say that I had issues with God. I had issues with God the first half of my life, or maybe my first two-thirds of my life. Because as I looked at it from a rational mind, rational being very questionable in my case, but in looking at it from my perspective, which was shady and scary to an extreme, why did babies die? You know, why did good people lose their arm? Why did husbands or wives die way too early? Why did people lose jobs and go through? Why were like children abused? That seems like God's screwing up to me. If you look at it from a certain point of view, and that was the way that I looked at it for a long time. And it's interesting to me because what I've found is, not to get into the inventory part, but what I've found is that the root, if you were to take all your fears and boil it down to one, if you could take all your fears and get it down to its lowest level, what I've discovered for myself is that where fear comes from is that God can't be trusted, and that he doesn't know what he's doing, and that I can do it better. And that's a scary place to live from. And every single person here has experienced that, whether you've become aware of it or not. It's kind of interesting because we wake up in the morning with a plan, and then the plan doesn't go the way we want it to, and then doesn't that mean that God's screwing me? I mean, but what I don't see is that everybody else wakes up with a plan, and I mess up their plan. So it's all perspective, really. It's kind of interesting to me. I've really discovered that it's a nightmare to believe everything you think. And I want to repeat that, because that's my message. That's my message to the world, is that it's a nightmare to believe everything you think. Every problem I've ever had was because I believed the thought. Every problem. And and it still haunts me. It still causes difficulty for me. But it's a little bit easier now. Most definitely. Now, so I come from a religious family, and so I was given a very heavy dose of religion and God, but it was also a heavy dose of dogma and you can't believe whatever you want. And that was the beauty of what I found when I came to AA, was that the second step says that we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. So if it's what there's a little asterisk next to step two that nobody ever sees. And the asterisk is that you can believe whatever you want to believe as long as this thing you call God or whatever you want to call it, higher power, unsuspected inner resource, the creator, whatever you want to call it, that as long as it's not you. And when I came to AA, that was a really important emphasis. And for the first time in my life, I was allowed to believe whatever I wanted to believe. So AA showed me more respect in that area than my family and my religion did, or my family's religion. I can't really say. I shouldn't say that was my religion, because I didn't pick it. I was forced to go, you know what I mean? And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that I can't really say that I picked it. Now, because of this concept that I had of a higher power, life was very, very difficult, because I was surrounded by things that I couldn't deal with. I was surrounded by people that didn't act the way I think they should. I was surrounded by events that happened that I didn't appreciate. I saw things that I couldn't come to terms with. And I didn't want, from that perspective, from that incorrect perspective, I didn't want anything to do with whatever it is that created that. So you could say the end of my alcoholism and the beginning of my recovery, I didn't pray, I wasn't a nice person, I did whatever I wanted to do, I was ruthless, I was ugly, I was manipulative, I was extremely pissed off, and I was extremely afraid, and I was extremely filled with guilt and remorse over stuff that I did. And that was why I turned to alcohol and drugs, because alcohol and drugs helps to escape from that craziness, that inner turmoil, that extremely uncomfortable in your own skin. So I personally am grateful to alcohol. I don't know what my life would have become if I didn't discover the magic escape button called alcohol. And I know, I've been sober now 21 years, and I know for a fact that if I get to be too uncomfortable, that once again alcohol will work again. Because it always did. And it always will, because I'm an alcoholic, and alcohol works very well. But I use alcohol to escape from this inner separation, let's call it, this inner unconnectedness, this struggle with life, this disagreement with life, this you and the world isn't acting the way I want it to. And I need to consider another way besides my own. Because the mind's idea of a good day is an entire day where I get my way. And how often has that happened, if ever? You know what I mean? How often does that happen? It's not a useful system. It doesn't work. It's never worked. But the mind is really good at sort of holding a carrot out and saying, but if you get this car, then you're going to be happy. If you get this house, then you're going to be happy. If you when the kids go to college, then you'll be happy. When I reach retirement, then I'm going to be happy. And there's this constant carrot that's being held out. But what's not noticed is that the mind is really good at disregarding that there were previous carrots that when you got it, it didn't make you happy. But then it comes up with another one. You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, let's say getting a house is your ultimate goal. You know, you've strived your whole life to get a house, and then you get the house, and now the bills start coming, and the lawn starts growing, and the pipe bursts, and the neighbors aren't cooperating, and then all of a sudden, this thing that was supposed to make you happy has turned into your biggest spiritual teacher. But you don't see it that way. Then it says, but okay, you have the house, but maybe if you got a house in a better neighborhood or in a different area or a different state, you know what I mean? Then it just keeps throwing up these carrots, but it never gets there. It never ever gets there. So you live a life of misery. And the mind justifies it. And you turn to the mind again for the next carrot. And it never worked. And so alcohol for me, for 13 years was my escape tool. It was my coping mechanism. And then the coping mechanism called drink then becomes a worse problem than what I'm trying to escape from in the first place. And now you got, you know, to deal with fights, and you got to deal with arrests, and you got to deal with losing jobs, and you got to deal with the nightmare of losing another one that you loved, and the nightmare of the looks from the family and from the friends and even from people that you don't know. And you're in this tailspin called alcoholism. You don't really notice that what's really going on is that after a period of time, the escape isn't working anymore. And now you have these drinking problems. Because you can't drink a little bit. When you start, you have to drink a lot. Because it's party time. And then I lived that way for 13 years, and then, you know, everybody knows that you have a drinking problem. Everybody knows that there's something way off. And you know that you can't stop. And then in my case, you know, I went into my second rehab, and I returned to AA because I had attempted AA a few times. And but this time you know that you can't drink, but my problem was that I knew I couldn't drink, but I thought that drinking was my problem, so not drinking was my solution. What I've now discovered is that the needing to escape from being separated is the problem. And drinking was actually the solution, not the problem. Drinking was the solution to that feeling separated. And then that coping mechanism just made life worse. But now I'm left with not drinking, and I'm still separated. I'm still separated from dealing with life. I'm still separated from, I'm still miserable because you're still not acting the way I think you should. Life is still not happening the way I think it should. And I'm still thinking that this carrot that the mind throws out there as you'll be happy if da-da-da-da-da happens still isn't working. So what do we have? What do we have? What do you do? I can't drink and I can't not drink. There's only two things. You either drink or you don't drink. When neither one works, what do? There's no door number three. And that was where I found myself, 3.5 years in sobriety. I can't blame alcohol anymore. What I came to see is that I can blame alcoholism. I can blame the separation that I used drink to escape from, but it's still that way. And that drove me to the steps. Because for the first time I realized that this isn't about alcohol. And, you know, just recently I had a little bit of a debate with somebody, and A comment was made to me that, you know, this is about alcohol. You need to keep this about alcohol. The person said that to me. They should have known that I'm very opinionated and I'm very informed. And it is not about alcohol. It is about sanity, which is mentioned in step 2. It is about conscious contact, which is mentioned in step 11. And it is about the spiritual awakening, which is mentioned in step 12. That's what it's about. This is not about not drinking. If we could not drink and be okay, then why would we need to go to meetings? I didn't drink for 3.5 years and I was not okay. And I needed to find another way. So I'm grateful for that stupidity, and I'm grateful for that insanity that I found myself in 3.5 years sober. But I couldn't blame alcohol, so I knew there was something else. And that was when it was explained to me by this huge man. He was not only a big man, but he was a quality man. And there aren't a lot of quality people. But I was fortunate enough to watch one before my eyes. I was fortunate enough to watch his life change. And I saw him change from a scumbag into a quality man. And I couldn't figure it out. Because, you see, I knew good people. I knew people that were good, but they were always good. They were just good people. I couldn't relate to them. I didn't like them particularly. They held up the mirror to me, and I wasn't a good person, so I didn't like being around good people. And I came from a family of good people, so I ran screaming from them. But now I saw at an AA meeting this guy that was a complete loser turn into a winner. And when you see that with your own eyes, you cannot deny it. And I said to him, Sam, you know, I know something happened to you a year ago. And what was it? Because I'm insane. I'm losing it. I hate life. And I'm supposed to be, and I'm sober? Like, this is how it is, sober? This totally sucks. At least when I'm drinking, I'm not feeling it all the time. When you're not drinking, you're feeling it all the time. And it sucks. So that was when he explained to me the deal. And what he explained to me was is that there's emotional, mental, spiritual, and psychological aspects of alcoholism that is left untouched unless we seek a spiritual solution for our alcoholism. And I have to be honest with you, when I first heard that, I was pissed because why is this news to me? This is about not drinking, isn't it? What are you talking about? I thought that drinking alcohol is my problem, so I thought that not drinking was my solution. And that was when I started seeing the depths of our problem, which is, like Chris would say, a whole lot worse than we ever even imagined it could be. If anybody here can get with the slogan, your best thinking got you here, if you can even get with it just in a minor way, your best thinking got you here. My best thinking got me here 3 or 4 or 5 times. My best thinking, my best attempts at life got me here 3 or 4 or 5 times. And that's what I found myself up against. My best thinking, again, either taking me out there at best, or keeping me progressively miserable at worst. And there's an expression that is not compatible, and that is that being sober and miserable is not a reasonable option. But that was how my life was. I was sober and I was miserable. As so many of us are. And that was when I saw the depth of the steps. Or rather, I shouldn't say I saw the depth of the steps. I saw the importance of the steps. I saw the need for the steps. Because prior to that, I thought it was just about not drinking. I thought it was just about alcohol. But I now saw that it wasn't. I now saw that, you know, I'm up against this thing called the mind that is not my best friend. I saw that I was a manufacturer of unhappiness, and I still can be. And I didn't want to live that way anymore. So that was when everything changed for me. That was when it was pointed out to me that I desperately need the steps, and that I desperately need a better perspective on God and life, because my way wasn't working, and I needed to consider another way besides my own. That's how I put it. I needed to consider another way besides my own. Now, when all you have is the mind, how can you possibly do that? Consider another way besides your own. Well, that's what the steps are all about. And that's why the steps were originally written and originally practiced, to be done immediately and quickly. As a famous old-timer used to say, when he was asked, "When do I get into the steps?" he was told, "If you stop throwing up, you're a little late." And you know, we do workshops now, and we take people through the steps. And you know, this group mentioned in the opening, you know, if anybody wants help, we can help you go through the steps. Please, I desperately appeal to you, if you haven't done the steps, please do so immediately. There's a bunch of people here that would really love to help you with that. And then maybe you'll stop hitting on our girlfriends. And then maybe you'll begin to have a life. Because, you know, I've heard speakers talk about, you know, AA gave me my life back. I didn't have a life before AA. AA gave me a life. It didn't give my life back. I didn't have a life before AA. I didn't have a life before conscious contact. I didn't have a life before I began to consider another way besides my own. There's a line in the book that talks about, you know, gradually things got worse. And that was what it was like before I discovered alcohol. That's what it was like while I was drinking. And that was what it was like for the first 3.5 years in recovery. Gradually things got worse. Some of the blatant problems went away when I stopped drinking. But if you somehow were able to connect something that could tap into my inner dialogue and my inner experience of life, you would have saw that there wasn't a big difference between before I discovered alcohol, while I was drinking, and for the first 3.5 years in AA. My inner experience was constant turmoil. Although at different times in my life and at different times in those cycles, it might have looked like things were going pretty well on the outside. But I can't say that was my inner experience. But sometimes I was just better at hiding it. And then I went through the process. You know, the late great Howard G. took me through the process. I saw something. I saw something in the way that man presented the steps, and I went for it. I was desperate. I'm grateful for that stupidity that I went through. I don't know if. I don't know if my life was going well. I don't know that I would have considered changing. We as alcoholics, we tend to choke screaming life. That's a weird expression, but it's all that came out. You know, we just have this way of not playing well with others. We have this way of not doing well. And when I started working the steps, I was gracefully told that I could believe whatever I wanted to believe as long as that I wasn't it. I was separated enough from religion to not be too overly influenced by that. And or I shouldn't say not influenced by that. I should say I wasn't too overly influenced by my version of that, because I've now come to see some really beautiful things can be found in religion, but the way I twisted it and manipulated it and self-centered it, it could not work ever for anybody. So I now was able to, I don't want to say start over, but I now was able to begin, and I was now able to begin to have a different perspective toward life, toward God, toward what happens in life. And I'm grateful for the teachers that have helped me with that and pointed me in that direction and been an influence and still are an influence. Because my perspective on life is much different now. So as I went through the process of the steps, something happened. Something was revealed to me. And what I mean by that is it's kind of interesting. This is something I recommend to people sometimes, is that I turned God, I turned spirituality, you know, all of the above, and whatever it's other expressions you want to use. I turned it into an experiment, because initially I sort of had doubts, because, you know, I had been looking at those steps for 3.5 years, and they looked mediocre at best. I still to this day refer to the steps as intellectually insulting, because when you turn the mind on anything, it has an issue. You know what I mean? The mind's not happy with much, and what was interesting to me was as I turned it into an experiment, and as I switched from the steps as a concept, or rather as an idea, and then turned it into a program of action, or what you could call an experience. When I went from the concept of the 12 steps to the experience of the 12 steps, it was mind-blowing, the difference, the extreme difference between the idea of the steps and the successful experience, the concept of the steps and the extremely successful experience with the steps. I couldn't deny it, you know. I went through the steps initially pretty quickly. My first and biggest, most extensive 4-step that I ever wrote, I did in 1 week. Because I made it a priority. And, you know, I was out there making amends, and I really saw how beautiful the 12-step program was. But when I went through the first time, what happened, there were a couple things that happened that really really spun my head around when it came to this thing called God, or whatever you want to call it. And that was that I remember, I'm not saying that you'll get the same results, but this is what happened to me. I remember the first year, and for maybe 5 or 7 or 8 years after that, I would occasionally have insomnia. And I'm talking about, you know, not sleeping well for like a week or more, not sleeping at all for a week or more. And I remember mentioning something to my sponsor at the time. His name was Garrett. After I had mentioned it a couple times, he said to me, "Bill, do you pray?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I say those mechanical prayers that my family's religion taught me." And he said, "Well, you know, when you go home tonight, why don't you ask God to help you with your sleeping?" And, you know, I thought that was really sponsorship mumbo jumbo 101. And you know, whatever. And then, you know, I experience another night of not sleeping, and, you know, the next night I was saying the prayers, and I almost remember sort of looking around to make sure that nobody was watching. And I lived alone, which is really weird, you know. And I said, you know, and God, please help me. I don't seem to be sleeping well. And the strange thing is that night I slept fine. And, you know, that was a fluke. I'm sure that wasn't related, you know. And I disregarded it. And, you know, maybe 6 months later, I had to go to my I was working for AT&T, and I had to go to our company picnic. And I don't really do the social thing very. At that time, I don't do the social thing very well. And now I'm thrust into having to go to this picnic, and I had just started working for AT&T, and I didn't really know very many people, and I really dreaded having to go to this picnic because I just don't. I wasn't a social person. I was very, very shy. I was very uncomfortable in social situations. And I remember I mentioned something to my sponsor, Garrett, and he said to me, "Bill, do you pray?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Why don't you ask God to help you with that?" And, you know, whatever. And then I found myself in the parking lot of the picnic, just sort of avoiding going in. And I found myself saying, you know, "God, can you, I'm really uncomfortable about this. Can you kind of help me with this?" And I went into the picnic, and the weirdest thing happened. I was there for, you know, maybe 4 hours, maybe 5 hours, and the weirdest thing happened. There were some people that I was able to sit with, and, you know, I'm a really good athlete, so, you know, throw me into the softball game, and, I can deal with that, sort of. And every friggin' time, I was starting to feel a little uncomfortable about having to go meet somebody or go, you know, just sort of feeling alone in the corner. Somebody would walk up to me and just start talking to me. As a matter of fact, one time this guy came walking up to me. About halfway through the picnic, this guy came walking up to me. And he goes, "Bill, I noticed that Easy Does It bumper sticker on your car. I'm a friend of Bill's too. And if you're feeling a little uncomfortable, you know, hang out with me." And I went through the whole picnic, and I didn't get overwhelmed by it. And now this has happened twice. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to get these results. I'm just sharing with you what happened to me. I'm sharing with you how God revealed himself to me. And, you know, there were times in certain situations like that where let's say, I would do it, and there were some times where I wouldn't do it. I turned it into an experiment. And what I discovered was that, you know, 99% of the time when I did it, it was definitely a better experience than when I didn't do it. And I was like, it's interesting. This is that God that I fear. This is that God that I think is out to get me, basically. This is that God that's, you know, I think is screwing me over, basically. And isn't that interesting? And then, you know, we go through the process of the steps, and then, you know, we start seeing things are changing, and I sort of have a different perspective on life. And one of the earlier perspectives that changed for me was the insomnia thing, because, you know, I really dreaded those times when I wasn't able to sleep. Because, you know, you're basically forced to be with yourself. You know what I mean? And it's like, whoa, that's a little bit too much. You know, a little bit too much. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't call anybody. I can't, you know, you can't distract it out by radios or TV. You know what I mean? It's you're just left with yourself. And it's harsh. And what's funny was what I discovered is that, I shouldn't say what I discovered. I should say, one day I decided to change my perspective of my insomnia. And what I started saying to myself and what I started saying to other people is, instead of, "Oh, this sucks, I haven't, you know, I didn't sleep again last night," what I started doing was I started using my times of not sleeping as maybe God wants me to talk with him during those periods of time. And has, you know, maybe woken me up so that I can sort of interact a little bit. And I would start praying or meditating or watching a spiritual video or turning it into this is an opportunity as opposed to this sucks. And my whole entire perspective toward insomnia changed. And I still occasionally will go a day or two without, you know, entirely sleeping. Like, I know I experienced it this past week where, you know, all of a sudden at like 2:30, I wake up and there's just this active energy. And it doesn't have necessarily anything to do with, you know, the mind churning. Sometimes it's like that, but this past week it wasn't like that. I woke up and I found that there was all this active energy. And what are you going to do about that? You know what I mean? What are you going to do about that? I'm not going to take a pill. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to, you know, I guess I could hit myself over the head with a pipe or something. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm up. All right, so I'm up. Why does that have to be labeled as a bad thing? I'm just up. It's no big deal. I can get more done now. I can meditate for longer now. I enjoy being with myself today. It wasn't like that most of my life. And it was an area of my life that I was able to basically change my perspective toward and have a different relationship with it and include it as almost like a spiritual lesson or in a spiritual perspective. So I don't dread the times now when I don't sleep. And that's just one little area of my life. All these things started happening. And I started seeing, you know what? This is... And then one of the biggest spiritual lessons in my life was my second marriage ended. And it ended nightmarishly. I've actually shared this twice now in the last week. But I distinctly remember calling up my friend and saying to him, listen, you know, there's only two things. I have to decide between these two things. And he was like, what are they? And I said, do I burn the house down when they're home or when they're not home? And, you know, it was classic because he started laughing, I started laughing. We both knew I wasn't going to burn the house down, but that was just all that was happening up here was, do I burn the house down? Because that was my house. It was my house, my mortgage, my deposit, my house. And now I wasn't living there anymore. And somebody else moved in and is now living in my house with my wife. And all this came up with was, do I burn the house down when they're home or do I burn the house down when they're not home? And you know what? From the moment of that nightmare, of that relationship ending, to this day, From the moment I realized that this relationship is probably over, before I had moved out, from the moment that I realized that this was over, to this day, today, I never said or did anything that I had to make amends for. Do you know how much of a miracle that is? As far as I'm concerned, that's humanly impossible, and that was what happened. I didn't believe everything I think. I did not burn that house down. I was pissed, and I was angry, and I was hurt like a wounded animal. And I did not do anything I regretted. And that's what you people did to me. And that's what this program did. And that's what this relationship with a higher power has done in my life. And it's interesting because just before I realized that the relationship was over, when things weren't so good, but before I realized that someone else had moved on. Did you notice how strategically nice I put that? That was kind of nice. That they had moved on. That I started praying that God, please make me a better lover. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about being able to love better. God, please make me a better lover. And that was like my mantra for 3 years. And for the first few months, I was still in that relationship. And then that was my mantra when the relationship ended. And that was my mantra when there was this silly back and forth. And that was my mantra when we went through the divorce and we had to settle money. And that was my mantra for a couple years after that relationship ended. And I stayed out of a relationship for a while, and I just said, God, please make me a greater lover. And at first I was pissed because I wanted to be a greater lover in that relationship. I forgot to say that to God. I just told God I want to be a better lover. I didn't say I want to be a better lover in this relationship. And that relationship was taken from me, if you excuse the expression. And what's interesting is a few years after that, my ex-wife came to my home group. And I had done a whole bunch of spiritual work. And I kept working with that mantra, God, please make me a better lover. And after the meeting was over, I went up to her and I said, you know, welcome to my home group, and I hope that you keep coming. And you know how when you think that maybe you've gotten over something, but you're really not too sure, and now when you're staring face to face with the person that you had to work through, that's the only time that you find out whether you actually are finished with it. And that was the moment that I realized that not only am I finished with it, but I actually care for this woman. I don't even feel that she needs to apologize to me. I don't need to forgive her for anything. I don't think she did anything wrong. And that's the perspective that I had developed by using spiritual work and by using the steps and by developing my relationship with my higher power. And that was the day that I knew that, you know what, I don't have an issue with this woman. And the messed up thing is that she started crying, and I started crying, and she said to me, how could you say that to me after what I did to you? And that was the moment that I realized that I had become a greater lover, because for about a year after our relationship ended, I felt that this woman screwed me. And there's no way that I could have loved her. And now, with a little bit of a different perspective, I realize that I can love her. I choose to love her from a distance. I don't mean that we don't talk, because we still talk to this day. I just mean that I don't see myself getting back with her. But I can care, even though sometimes my mind can tell me that she doesn't deserve it because of what she did, quote unquote, which is all a crock of crap that's all made up in my head. And I didn't turn it into God screwing me, because I wanted to be in that relationship, and it ended. And I saw the beauty of that lesson. And I saw the beauty of that. I saw the beauty of how God used that to make me into a better person. I went through forced painful change, and I came out the other end the better for it. And that's happened so many times in my life. It's unbelievable. It's undeniable. There's these two questions that I often ask people. They're important questions for me. So I share it with the group, as I would suggest these are important questions for you, if I can be so bold. And that is this. The two questions are this. I've asked so many people these questions, and it's really caused a quandary for people, because they just can't get with all of it, usually. And the two questions are this. Do you believe that God still interacts with the world today? Now, if you don't, then how are you going to improve conscious contact? How are you going to pray for help to remove your shortcomings? I believe, and I believe that AA believes, that God still interacts with this world today. And that he didn't either not have any part of this, and he didn't, you know, create all this and then go away. And I pose to you that that's what AA believes, because of the way the literature is written. It's obvious that AA believes that God is interactive. I know that there are some religions that say that you cannot interact with God. I'm grateful that that's not said here. And it's also not been my experience, because I've had experiences of God. I've had thoughts land in my head that did not come from me. I've had my mind scream, and 99% of my being was screaming at me that said, go and choke that person, they're such an idiot. And I just say, thanks for sharing. And I don't know where that comes from, because what I wanted to do was not very nice. But there was this other part of me that was always there, that part that I would say is of God, that's our spiritual essence. that can be interacted with at any moment. I believe that God is always and already here. It's not something that needs to be sought. It's something that needs to be. It's something that doesn't come in. It's something that is there and always was there and always will be there. But we were just looking elsewhere. We had our heads turned. And then the second question. So the first question is, do you believe that God is still interacting with this world? And I say yes, and that's been my experience. And that's been very helpful in my life. And I would suggest that AA literature suggests that that's possible, that that is a truth also. And the second question is this. And this is the one that a lot of people can't even get with question one, and I would say question two is probably even more difficult to get with. But this is, as far as I'm concerned, a truth. And the second one is this. Do you believe that God always has your best interest in mind? And that's a hard one, because how many times has life not gone the way we wanted it to? How many times did we have to lose the child? How many times did we have to take some abuse? How many times did some bad person get a job over us? How many times did we get into an accident? How many times did something happen that we screamed and said, no, this is absolutely unacceptable. This is not okay with me. But you see, when again and again and again and again and again and again and again, when I've seen throughout my life that when I go through forced painful change, when I have to deal with something that doesn't go the way I want it to, sometimes not even close, go through something that I didn't want to, I've always come out the other end the better for it. So I have to assume that God knows better than I do. I have to assume that I had to lose the wife in order to learn how to love. I have to assume that I had to lose a 16-year job with AT&T and companies like that in order to finally grow up and not be dependent and not be immature and to finally grow up and be a man. So I pose those two questions to all of you. I don't want you to answer me, and I don't want you to talk to me after the meeting about it. I just want you to consider those two questions. I don't care if you like it. I don't care if you agree with me. I don't care. I have the microphone right now. And those two questions are this. And for me, these are incredibly important questions. Do you believe that God still interacts with this world? And do you believe that God always has your best interests in mind? Because if you don't believe those two things, I believe that you need a bigger concept of God. As a matter of fact, that's a workshop I've always wanted to do. Do you need a bigger God? Because what I discovered was that I needed a bigger God. And I know that we all experience things in similar ways. So if there's some area of your life that you just cannot accept, you need a bigger God. If there's some relationship that's totally messed up and you're arguing with it, or if a relationship just ended, or if you just lost a job, or if your best friend just OD'd and died, or if somebody you know just committed suicide, or if your kid just died, or if you just found out something, or whatever. And I can guarantee you there's probably not a person in this room that doesn't have something like that rattle around in your head. We don't have to believe everything that we think. And that is the greatest lesson that I've ever learned, is that I don't have to believe everything I think. And the problems that I still have in my life today is because I believe the thought. A thought of, oh, it shouldn't be that way, and I complain about it. Or however that plays out. So trust God. Trust life. Don't trust your mind. I can guarantee you that God is a whole lot more loving than your mind is. I mean, think about it. If somebody that you knew treated you and talked to you the way that your mind sometimes talked to you, do you think that that person would be in your life for very long? I can guarantee you that if people talk to me the way my mind sometimes talked to me, they would not be around for very long. So why do we tolerate it here? If the mind was so reliable, why is it that we can change our mind at any moment? I can guarantee you every single person in this room 10 years ago believed something that they would absolutely stake their life on that they no longer believe today. And that's how reliable your mind is. You were absolutely stuck on stupid 10 years ago and now you see the light because you chose to see it differently. And for me, that's how I came to believe. And it's not even belief. That's how I've come to know God. It's not what the mind portrays. God always has my best interest in mind, even if it's not even close to the way I think it should be. And that's how it is for me. Thanks for letting me share.